Well, I'm sitting there with my eyes closed and my mind's in a settled state, and then I think the thought that I'd like to levitate or fly, and then it happens.
Is it really flying?
At this point, it's not really what you'd call flying. It looks more like hopping around, what happens to most people, and there are probably about maybe 10,000 people around the world that are practicing the first stages of levitation. What happens is you just lift off quickly and then plop down maybe a few seconds later, a few feet ahead of where you were when you started, and maybe you hop around several hops, kind of frog in a frog-like fashion.
What does it feel like?
It feels, you can feel the lightness, and sometimes you can feel that exhilaration. And even though you aren't actually taking off through the air like Superman, sometimes I do get that feeling of freedom, of flying.
It just feels like weightless when you do?
Light and exhilarating and kind of a rush sort of feeling.
Do you think of anything when you're doing it?
Well, the way it works is you just settle your mind down to a very quiet state and then have the impulse or the thought or desire that you'd like to levitate. And so that's basically what you're thinking. The whole reason this works is just developing mind and body coordination. For example, most people have, if they want to walk across the room, they have the thought to themselves, well, I'd like to walk across the room. And there's enough connections between the mind and body that the body will walk across the room. This is just taking that several steps further, and you might have the thought, well, I'd like to fly across the room. And if there's enough connection and coordination between the mind and body, then that's possible.
Do you have to learn to do that, though, to get that coordination? Or can anybody decide that they're going to do it?
Well, anybody potentially could do it, but it does take some time to develop that, I guess we could say. This is based on the TM program, the Transcendental Meditation Program. It's kind of an advanced program within that, and anyone that's been meditating a certain amount of time, months actually, can learn this advanced program.
How did you find out that you could levitate?
Well, I found out I could do it by taking a course that gives an instruction in these advanced programs, and I was really surprised because I thought, well, I'll be the one in a thousand that won't be able to get off the ground. I'll sit there like a lump of jelly donuts or something. But it worked, and I think to me that's one of the most rewarding parts about this is the vision of possibilities. If I myself can do this, can practice the first stages of levitation, then a lot more is possible. And it seems that there are things possible that I can't even imagine yet, and that's kind of exciting. And as I'm growing towards that, it's very encouraging.
Why would somebody want to levitate?
Well, the practice of levitation itself is fun and enjoyable, and it may have other practical applications in the future when people can actually fly between point A and point B without using gas or something. But the idea of doing it is to develop the whole of the person, the whole consciousness. It's not that levitation or these other supernormal abilities are that big of a deal, but they do develop consciousness to a greater extent.
Where do you hope it takes you?
Well, I guess the goal is using all of your potential, or you could call that a state of enlightenment, using all of your physical and mental potential. And in that state, anything you want could happen. If you want to fly, that can happen. As far as you can go, all of that probably is possible.
After levitation, what's next?
Probably anything you could imagine and more.
Astral projection?
That could be possible. Rather than flying physically from point A to point B, perhaps you could just teleport like they do on Star Trek. Beam them up, Scotty, and you'll be there. That way you won't have to actually go physically through the air, you know, if it's raining or something.
So Star Trek is real life?
Could very well be.
I want to fly like an eagle.
Nancy Harris. Now she levitates, but tomorrow, who knows? Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.
Here in a
you've got a useless, worthless hound dog, cat, goat, chicken, bird, or other family pet that's no longer your family's friend, the Dog Pound can take care of that, either through disposal or adoption. The Pound, which calls itself the Animal Shelter, advertises itself as your pet's best friend, meaning it's preferable to take an animal to them rather than let the animal starve or freeze to death, as is sometimes the case. The shelter maintains photo files of all animals either retrieved by them or brought in, except for those that are in really bad shape. People looking for a lost animal or wanting one to take home can flip through the photos to see if their beast is there. On the average, between 50 and 75 animals are in hand at any one time, though there is room for twice that amount. In 1 month, they impound approximately 450 dogs and 120 cats, according to Assistant Director Bob Spencer. There are a number of reasons why animals get impounded.
Litters are a high number. People let their females out when they come into season. They get bred, and we end up with the litter because they can't get rid of them. Cats also, a lot of litters come in. Another high area of impound are people who move into an apartment that won't allow them. Plus, every day we pick up anywhere from 10 to 20 dogs running at large on the streets.
Is that the dog catcher function?
Yeah, that's the dog catcher function. Now we do have a ticket system where more and more we chase the animal home and write a $10 ticket rather than go through all the expense of the borough putting up a dog and having to book it in, probably having to dispose of it because the ratio of redemptions is not too high.
What is that ratio?
Of all the animals we impound, approximately 25 to 30% are either adopted or redeemed, and the rest are all put to sleep.
Put to sleep. What procedure do you use?
Okay, we use intravenous injection. A lot of people, for some reason, figure we gas them or use the high altitude chamber, which I'm not sure is even in use anywhere in Alaska anymore. Most of the animal shelters are going to the more humane methods of intravenous injection.
An animal is kept a while before that intravenous injection is administered. If it comes in as a stray or is put up for adoption, the waiting period is 3 days, unless it has some sort of ID, and then the wait is 5 days. What do you do in terms of trying to find homes?
When people ask for a certain type of dog, you know, we can recommend them what we have on hand, and basically that's about the extent of our actively trying to find homes for them. We have them on display here where anyone who comes through here can see them, which are several people a day.
In addition, two local pet groups take out classified advertisements in the newspapers touting the merits of various adoptees.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that doggy's for sale.
What does it cost to so-called adopt an animal from here?
Okay, on dogs it's $35, and there's a $10.50 charge on top of that for a rabies shot if they need one. Now out of that fee there is a $25 refund if at the age of 6 months they do have it spayed or neutered. So the actual cost then would only be $10. And on cats, it's $25 adoption fee plus the $10.50 for rabies shot. And out of that, there's a $15 refund for spay or neuter.
I don't want a bunny or a kitty. I don't want a parrot that talks. I don't want a bowl of little fishies. He can't take a goldfish for a walk.
We have special mixtures of puppy chow, you know, rather than just throwing the same dog food at all of them. Young kittens receive soft food. We also have food on hand for exotic type animals. We've had monkeys, rats, rabbits, chickens, goats, pigs, you name it, we've had it.
Can a person ever put in an order for an animal, you know, call you up and say, if you get a blue spotted kangaroo, I'd really like one, that sort of thing?
We keep a list somewhat of probably only about a month long, probably, on wants and losts and founds and that such sort of thing. But we, again, recommend people keep checking with the shelter because any kind of list such as that is awfully hard to keep up with.
Do you ever get really attached to some of those animals and have a hard time parting with them or disposing of them?
I think all of us, you know, have favorites down here all the time. I think just about everyone has taken an animal home, you know, at least once from here. I've myself taken home a couple. So.
If you want to take home a couple of exotics or common garden variety dogs and cats or dispose of same, you might contact the animal shelter, your pet's best friend. I'm Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. Lee Leonard is the acting manager of the Department of Transportation's Energy Research Section. His current research concerns gasohol, particularly determining whether gasohol can be used effectively in the climate that we have in Alaska.
Gasohol is a substance which is comprised of 10% ethyl alcohol and 90% unleaded gasoline. The idea of gasohol is to come up with a fuel which can be effectively used in vehicles as they exist now without further modification, and at the same time reduce the nation's oil consumption in form, in this case, of gasoline. In this case, what we would do by replacing 10% of our normal used gasoline with alcohol, we could in turn reduce our nationwide energy consumption, gasoline energy consumption, by 10%. It is becoming a very popular fuel in the lower 48, and it's being sold in many states now. A year or two ago, it was sold primarily in the Middle West in about five or six states. Now, I believe it is sold in a large percentage of the states in the lower 48. There are some tax incentives being offered on gasohol fuel to get people to use it. It seems to be very popular, and it's doing quite well outside. The question we have is, as with many other solutions to problems, what works for someone in the lower 48 doesn't necessarily work for Alaska.
One potential problem concerns the purity of the alcohol that is required. It must be anhydrous, meaning without water. The distilling process is more complex than that required for ordinary alcohol. If water does get mixed in with the pure alcohol-gasoline mixture, something called phase separation results. Then the alcohol falls to the bottom of the tank and the gasoline stays on top.
Obviously, if this occurred continually in your vehicle, you'd keep adding more fuel. The alcohol would build up on the bottom. The gasoline would build up on the top. When you started sucking the pure alcohol out of your gas tank, especially at cold temperatures, you would find that it wouldn't be burning properly. In fact, it wouldn't be burning at all, because one of the problems with alcohol fuel is that it does not vaporize at low temperatures.
Low in this case, meaning as high as 30 degrees Fahrenheit above zero. So the proportion of alcohol to gasoline and ensuring the mixing of the two is critical for combustion, particularly in interior Alaska's winters, this year excepted. But the major problem that Leonard will be investigating concerns condensation. Phase separation especially tends to occur in the presence of water, a problem many Alaskans experience in the winter with normal gasoline and refer to as water in the gas. With gasohol, even the tiniest bit of water in the tank causes the alcohol to fall down and the gasoline to separate out to the top, and the engine cannot combust.
If we resolve that, then we figure we're home free.
The burden falls on the service station.
The station owner will have to be sure that his storage tanks are free of water, and also the handling and the blending of the alcohol by the supplier will have to be done under more careful and controlled conditions than have perhaps more controlled than we are doing it now. We don't know exactly what kind of expense and difficulty that will entail.
One difficulty the state probably will not have is obtaining the raw materials, both for the gas and for the alcohol.
Obviously, because of the potential we have in this state for the production of fuel, alcohol fuel through agriculture, especially the production of ethanol there, suggests that we have a potential for producing a large quantity of alcohol, and if it can be used within the state for fuel, the better off we are.
I assume you're referring to such sources as barley.
Yes, that's right.
According to Leonard, one person is proposing an ethanol distillery for fuel use in Delta in conjunction with expansion of the Delta Barley Project. There is the possibility of small industries of this type in the interior.
Even the backyard potato farmer could have a small ethanol plant, sort of the backyard distillery idea. It's already being done in the Midwest, where farmers are distilling their poor or waste crops, and in turn using the alcohol to power their farm machinery, in warmer weather, that is. But there are a few problems associated with the backyard distillery.
Alcohol, is, and this is grain alcohol, so the way it comes out, it is drinkable. And the federal government has very closely regulated this, as we most of us know. And anybody who just decided to make a still and start fooling around with this would be running the risk of infringing on several, I'm sure, federal regulations. To get a license to actually operate a still like this is a very complex process. So the average homeowner or someone with a small garden would probably not want to go through that process or run the risk of finding themselves at odds with the federal revenors, as they're more commonly known in other parts of the country.
People who decide that distilling their own is too much trouble shouldn't try putting a bottle of sipping whiskey in their tanks either. There's too much water. Even Everclear isn't pure enough.
When we were starting in the lab, the first thing we said was, let's get us a bottle of Everclear, which we did. It was a little bit touchy buying that with state money, but we did it anyway. We did denature it, however, so that it couldn't be used for medicinal or other purposes. And Everclear is 95% pure alcohol. But the 5% water is all that's needed to cause stratification and separate the gasoline from the alcohol, and therefore the Jack Daniels wouldn't work, nor would the Everclear.
A mixture of anhydrous alcohol and gasoline, while not drinkable, may improve mileage, probably will not reduce ice fog, since it's also a hydrocarbon fuel, and is a touchy subject with the oil companies.
The oil companies are the biggest opponents of gasohol and alcohol fuels. They want to sell synthetic fuels, which are similar kinds of alcohol, gasoline, and other more exotic blends made from coal shales and tar sands and so forth. So they've been not helpful at all, and there's a lot of propaganda going around on both sides, both the alcohol fuel proponents and the opponents. Some say that that it will never be cheaper than synthetic fuels. Others say, in fact, that it will. I guess the indication in this is right now there are many large-scale ethanol plants under construction with fuel in mind.
How soon do you think it will be before a person can drive up to the pump and say, fill her up with gasohol?
In Alaska, I'm not sure. The potential for that will depend on the outcome of our project, probably as a beginning.
Lee Leonard of the Department of Transportation's Energy Research Section in Fairbanks. I'm Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. What is going on here?
A lot of fun right now. It's called a rockathon, and it's an effort on our part to raise money for the Heart Association. So all the money that's pledged for our folks to be rocking today will all go toward the Heart Association to help them in their work.
How did the people who are rocking get involved in this?
We just get them involved. Last year, well, this is the third year we've been into it, and so they know what's happening, and they know where the money's going, and it's not hard to get them into it once it gets started. And 6 hours may be a long time, so they probably won't make, some of them won't make the whole 6 hours. But during that time, we have entertainment going the full time, and it should be a lot of fun.
How old are these people who are rocking for the Heart Association?
Our oldest that's out there rocking right now is probably 94 or 95. And our youngest is probably 30. Yeah.
When you say pledges, how does that work?
People have and still can pledge in and say, I'll give so much an hour for someone to rock, and then if they rock 6 hours, then you multiply and you come up with a figure.
What kinds of pledges have you had so far?
We've had a lot of just flat donations where someone will say, I'll sponsor a chair or this individual, or $50 or $100 or whatever. And then we have people who say, I'll pledge $1 an hour or $5 an hour. And there's one lady we just got into a chair whose family has $16 an hour on her, so we want to make sure she got in a chair.
You say rocking. Some people seem to be rolling.
Some of them are in wheelchairs and not able to get into the rocking chairs, and so we will try to keep track of them and the time that they're here. And we have one gal who's doing that, nothing but that, just trying to keep track of who's here and what they're doing.
How many people are there actually rocking or rolling?
We have 30 rocking chairs out there right now, and then I don't know how many wheelchairs, and then we'll change. There'll be some that just won't make it very long, and we'll remove them, and then other people take their chair.
It looks like you've got people like Borough Mayor John Carlson in here as well. He's not exactly a resident of Carriage North.
No, we have what we call a dignitary chair, and that chair is occupied by community leaders that have people pledging support for the half hour that they'll be rocking. Mayor Wood will be here later on today, and Chancellor Cutler and a couple of physicians and people from the Native Association are going to be with us.
How come you're rocking away to this music? What's making you do this?
Just happy. Just glad to be alive and so many lovely people around me and everything, and I'm just enjoying it.
Looks like you've got a particular crown, our sweetheart. How'd you get that crown?
I didn't know I had it. Is it up there? Oh, boy.
Mayor Carlson, what are you doing here?
I'm rocking with my pet rock. I got a pet rock to bring along to the rock-a-thon from the people in the library staff, so I brought it along with me to rock.
Is that supposed to keep your heart going while you're doing
it? Yes, I should say. We're rocking for the heart, our station.
What are you doing here today?
Huh?
What are you doing here today?
What?
What are you doing here?
What's he doing?
It looks like you're rocking. Is that it? How come you're rocking in this wheelchair?
Yeah.
Karen McPherson at the Heart Association Rockathon in Fairbanks.